Well, I want you to imagine that you are surrounded by some of the most enthusiastic and committed followers of Jesus. And one of them asks you this question: who is the most important believer of all time? How would you answer the question? Would you say Abraham or Moses or David or Elijah or maybe the Apostle Peter or Paul? Well, that's the situation that Jesus was in the passage that Nigel read from Matthew chapter 18. He was surrounded by his disciples. In other words, Jesus' most enthusiastic and committed followers. They were the people around him. And they asked, who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Now, Jesus didn't point to any of the biblical greats. He didn't point to Abraham or Moses or David or any of those. Instead, he went to the crowd round about, found a little child, maybe someone like Boaz perhaps, plonked them in front of everyone and said, well, if you want to be great in the kingdom, you've got to be like this little child. He didn't say, you've got to be like Moses, not that Moses, the Moses in the Bible. He didn't say, you've got to be like the Apostle Paul. He didn't say that. He says, you've got to be like this little child. Well, that was the very opposite of what the disciples expected. But often we find that Jesus does the opposite of what everyone expects. So if Jesus' words are a surprise to us today, how much more were they a shock to the first century hearers? You see, in Jesus' day, far more than our day, children were to be seen but not heard. Some of you are old enough to remember growing up in an environment like that. There was no UN Convention on the Rights of the Child back then. Now, that's not to say that children weren't valued. They were valued, because if you put them to work, they could get in lots of crops and do lots of things for you. So they did value children, but not quite the same way as maybe today. Children were raised to be obedient and disciplined. And from the age of about 7, they were set to work to help feed themselves and the rest of the family. It was a tough life, and everybody needed to help. So for Jesus to take this little child as an example of the greatest in the kingdom was a big shock. So what we're going to do tonight is look at the words that Nigel read from the Bible and see what they teach us about children, and see what they teach us about the kingdom of heaven as well. And for children especially, and I'm glad there's lots of you here tonight, for children especially, these are really important words. So I'm going to speak primarily to the children tonight. And that doesn't mean to say the rest of you can sneak off when I'm looking down here or up there. I hope that as I'm not going to dumb the sermon down, but as it's geared primarily to children, then I hope that the rest of us will be able to follow along and benefit from it as well. And there's three things that I want to say from this passage. Here's the first thing. Children, you have something valuable. You have something valuable. Did you know, children, that you have got something to teach us? And that's really clear from the story, isn't it? Because Jesus got this little child in front of everyone and basically says, you've got to learn from this guy. You've got to learn from him. He's got something to teach you. Now, that shouldn't surprise us, actually. Because we adults, we learn things from kids all the time, don't we? We don't usually admit to it, but it's true. But the lesson that Jesus had for us, the thing that children, he said, could especially teach adults was the lesson of humility. We can see that from verse 4 of Matthew chapter 18. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. So why was this child such a great example of humility? Well, it's because children, especially children in Jesus' day, don't have very much. Young children can do almost nothing for themselves, can they? Very young children. they need an adult or maybe an older brother or sister to help them with the basic things they have to do. Really young children, and some can't cook. Young children can't clothe themselves. The very youngest can't even eat without someone helping them. They're completely dependent on other people. If there wasn't for other people, oh, what a terrible situation they'd be in. And that's where their humility comes from, because they need so much help. And Jesus is saying that all of us need to recognize that we all need help too, that we are dependent, not necessarily on our parents, but we are dependent on God if we're to enter the kingdom of heaven. And children help us to see that and to understand that. And children, therefore, are a great example of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Because they've got the essential qualities of being a follower in abundance. Humility is mentioned here, and what flows from humility is faith and trust. And children are great at demonstrating that. And what Jesus is saying is that all of us need to recognize our dependence on God, just like a child needs to recognize their dependence on others. So this is what I want you children to... You've got something valuable, something that you can teach us. And here's the thing that might be a bit weird if you're a child. You've got the most to teach us, or being most like a child. Okay? You've got most to teach us when you're being most like a child. You see, sometimes you might think, well, until I can be useful and help other people and teach other people, I've got to grow up. I've got to learn loads of stuff. Then I'll be able to teach people. But what Jesus is saying here is actually, no, almost the younger you are, the more you've got to teach about this kind of stuff. Now, does that mean that kids shouldn't want to grow up? It doesn't mean that. It's a good moment for me to remind us that it's not good to stay like a child forever. Sadly, there are people in their 20s and in their 30s, maybe some of them even older, who still act like children in all the wrong ways. Well, that's no good, is it? We do need to grow up. Does mean that as we grow up, we need to be careful to hold on to what makes children great. We need to hold on to humility, hold on to dependence, hold on to trust and faith. We need to hold on to those things that children are really good at, and adults often aren't very good at. Because as adults, we can lose that. We can become proud instead of humble. We can become cynical instead of trusting. But children, you need to hold on to those things as you grow up. Now, sadly, I think that's going to be more difficult for you as you grow up than it was for me when I grew up. And the reason I think that is because lots of people today make a great big effort of telling you children how special and wonderful you are. They didn't do that when I was a child. At least they didn't do it to me. I remember going to see my great aunt Phyllis. I had a great aunt Phyllis. She was in hospital and we went to see her. I was about 14 or 15. And she said, I hadn't seen her for a little while, she said, "Oh, what a handsome boy you've turned into." And my mother burst out laughing. She thought it was the funniest thing she'd ever heard that someone would think I was handsome. So nobody told me I was wonderful when I was little. I'm being a bit unfair on my mother. But things are a bit different now. So I want to help us all with our humility, okay? I'm going to help us all to feel humble. Is that okay? Now, firstly, maybe you've been told you are extra special and wonderful. It isn't true. All right? You're not extra special and wonderful. We're all special. That's true. But none of us are extra special. Romans 2:11 tells us that God doesn't show any favoritism. Now, I'm sure perhaps you are extra special to your mum or dad. That's okay. But you're no more special than your brothers and sisters are. None of us are extra special. We need to remember that if we're to be humble. The second thing is, sometimes people tell us, you can do whatever you set your mind to. As you grow up, you can do whatever you set your mind to. Well, I'm afraid that isn't true. We're all different. The Bible's really clear about that. We've all got different things that we're good at. And no one could be good at everything. Now, imagine if, as a child, I'd set my heart on starring in the opera. Do you think that if I'd have set my mind to starring in the opera, I could be the world's best opera singer? Probably not. The people sitting closest to me are the ones who are saying no the loudest. All right, I couldn't do that. Even if I'd set my mind to it, I could never be a great opera singer. But that's okay, because God's made us all different. And we're all good at different things. The Bible makes it very clear to us that God's given all of us gifts. And we're to use those gifts. But that doesn't mean that we can do anything, because maybe we won't be good enough at the thing to be able to do it, just like me and singing. And the third thing that sometimes people tell us, which isn't true, is that you can be anyone or anything you want to be. Now, I wanted to be a Wrexham footballer. I really did. And I tried really hard. But I wasn't. And I'd like to say it's because Wrexham were so brilliant, I could have made it into the Swansea team, even if I couldn't be a Wrexham footballer. But that's probably not true. But God made us all different. And even though I couldn't be that, I could be some other things that maybe Wrexham footballers couldn't be. And that's how God made me. God made me to be me. And he made you to be you. With all your gifts and the things you're not very good at. And he made you just like that. And that's great. We don't need to change that, the way that God made us. We can be ourselves. Not to say we shouldn't always try to do our best. Absolutely we should. But being humble is about recognizing how God made us, with our strengths and our weaknesses. It's about making the most of what he's given us. It's about recognizing that we're weak sometimes, and frail, and sinful. But that with his help, we can become the most loving, joyful, peaceful, patient, kind, good, faithful, gentle, and self-controlled disciples of Jesus that it's possible to be. So that's the first thing, children. You've got something valuable, something you can teach us. The second thing, children, I want you to know tonight is that you are loved and protected. You're loved and protected. And I'm looking especially here at Matthew chapter 18 and verse 6, which says this: whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened round his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. That's quite a metaphor, isn't it? Now, I'm suggesting that that verse helps children, and actually all of us, to understand that we're loved and protected. I wonder if you've got anything protected at home. Maybe you've got a piggy bank, something like that, with some money in it. Maybe you've got a lock on the front door of the house to make sure no one can sneak in and steal your television or whatever it is. Maybe you've ever seen a bank vault. Have you ever seen a bank vault, maybe in real life or on the television? These great big thick doors and lots of keys that you need to open at the same time. Or maybe you've been to the Crown Jewels and you've seen everything in behind glass cabinets and lots of alarms and soldiers and policemen and other people guarding it all. You see, the more valuable something is, the greater the protection we tend to give it. And the more valuable something is, the greater the penalties or the punishments that would be threatened if it was damaged or broken or taken. So if someone pinched your piggy bank, then that would be a bad thing and the person would be punished. But they'd be punished a whole lot more if they stole the crown jewels, because they're more important and more valuable. So Jesus is saying here, he's talking about this really almost extreme thing, to have a great millstone round your neck. Do you know what a millstone is? They have these huge stones that they use for grinding out wheat and flour. And they can be enormous. I'm not sure exactly how big they were in Jesus' day, but maybe about this big, something like that, and about this wide. Imagine something like that made out of stone, a big circle, with a hole in the middle, a bit like a polo mint, okay, but much bigger. Then I plonked it over your head, all right, fastened it on, and chucked you in the sea. All right? That's pretty scary, yeah? That's what Jesus is talking about. And he's saying, these are the measures that I will go to protect my little ones. I'm warning anyone who wants to do them harm, these are the measures that I'll go to. And I'm saying that shows us just how much Jesus cares for his little ones. About 60 years ago, the man who was regarded probably at the time as the world's greatest theologian, he'd written kind of volumes and volumes of books. He'd written one book called Church Dogmatics, and it was all about theology. That's all it was, okay? And if you'd have put this book on a shelf, it was about that long. All right? I don't even know how many volumes it had, like 12 or something volumes, all right, with about 500 pages in each volume. This huge, that's how clever this chap was. And he went to a university in America on tour. I think it was 1962. And somebody asked him there, what's the most profound thing you've learned in your study of theology, writing all these huge books? And this is what he said. Jesus loves me. This I know, for the Bible tells me so. And that's probably the most important thing you're going to hear tonight. Whatever age you are, Jesus loves you. And because he loves you, he's willing to go to the most extreme lengths to keep you safe, to protect you. Now, Jesus isn't saying here, I'm really going to get a millstone and stick it on someone's neck and throw them into the sea, okay? That's not what he's saying, okay? This is a metaphor, all right? But a little bit later in Matthew's gospel, we do get a sense of what Jesus would do in order to protect his little ones. Because what Jesus did do to was carry that beam of the cross up until Golgotha's hill, allow the Roman soldiers to nail his palms and his feet onto the cross, and he was crucified, wasn't he, for our sake. That's the extreme length to which Jesus was prepared to go to keep all of his little ones safe. And if you're trusting in Jesus Christ, then his life and death will keep you safe forever. Not just in this life, but in the life to come. And that's what you get from Jesus, children who are trusting in him. That's what your parents want for you. It's what we as a church want for you. We want you to know that you're loved and protected. Now you might be thinking, well, why do I need protecting? You need protecting because we are all fallen people who live in a fallen world. That means a world that's not perfect, where lots of bad things happen, and where we do bad things too. Now, in the church here, we can't protect you, or even in your families, your parents can't protect you from all the effects of living in a bad and broken world. But where we can protect you from those things, we want to do that. You see, Jesus took on punishment that we deserve for our Still a very powerful way. Parents will often do that too. Did you know that? They will often suffer so that you don't have to suffer. They'll pay for things so you don't have to pay. They'll worry about things so you don't have to worry about them. They'll go without so you don't have to go without. Because they love you and they want to protect you. The other reason why you need protecting is because you're weak. And the strong must always protect the weak. Now, it might not be very nice and kind, you might think, to say that you're weak. But it's not an insult. It's just a simple reality. And if you don't believe me, I'm only speaking to children at this point now. If you don't believe me that you're weak, very happy to have a boxing match later. Children only need apply. Now, I want to say something here now to parents and grandparents and uncles and aunts and other folk in those sorts of categories. It's right and proper that we protect our children. But there's a danger, isn't there, that we can over-protect our children. The Bible tells us to train a child up in the way he should go. Some people here tonight who know all about football training. And one of the things that happens in football training is that when Moses plays football in the, under fives or whatever it is that he's in, the rules are quite different to the way that they are for the 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds. No goalkeeper for a start, no headers really. The rules are much simpler. It's different, but it's just right for that age group. And as the kids go through, and if they keep on going and keep on playing football, then the rules will change and things will be different. As they'll learn how to do more things, how to do slide tackles, how to head the ball, how to play offside. Those things will come, and children will be trained in that. And so it is here as well, as we need to protect but not overprotect. So children, there'll be some things in the church and in family life that we don't ask of you, but we do ask of those who are older. There will be some things in family life and in church life that we don't let you do, because they're the responsibility of those who are older. And because it's right that the strong protect the weak. Now children, in all of this, as we're thinking then about what's right for me at my age and for children like me at my age, in football we could say, should we worry about offside now or leave that till later? And the similar kind of things in church life and in life generally. And here's the thing that I would say to you children. Try not, if you can help it, try not to copy the adults. Try not to copy the adults. You see, if Moses at age five was starting to copy the way I play football, it's not going to go well. I'm one of those kind of midfield generals. Do you know what I mean? It means I haven't got very much energy, so I don't move around very much. But I pass the ball. But Moses, he's got loads of energy. He can run around and get in people's way and all of that kind of stuff. I can't do that anymore. If he tried to copy me, it wouldn't work very well. But maybe if there was a child who was, say, six or seven, Moses is five, and he copied that child, oh, that would be a real help to Moses, wouldn't it, in learning how to play football in the right way? I once went to a men's theological study group. Sounded quite impressive. This is not a church I've ever attended, so don't try and kind of work out where it was. I went to this men's theological study group, and there were lots of people there, and we were reading a book by a bloke called John Owen. All right, Nigel will know who John Owen is. John Owen used to write in Latin, all right? Now, we were reading a translation of the Latin, but it was still pretty complicated. And there was a lad there who turned up wearing a tie and a tank top. And these were not on occasions at the time where tank tops were trendy. He was 10. And his dad was there wearing a tie and a tank top and reading John Owen. And I wonder if the 10-year-old might have been better playing football. You see, if we copy people who are much older than us, in the wrong ways at least, it can be a hindrance to us. And here it gets really hard when you're in a small church. I was in a small church when I was growing up. So there weren't that many people who were just a little bit older than me. In fact, for quite a long time when I was in church, there wasn't anyone who was a little bit older than me. That was quite hard then for me to have role models that I could learn from. And I was really thankful when I grew up, there was a big meeting for young people from all kinds of different churches that I could go to, and I could have role models there and learn from people who are just a little bit older than me. We need that. All of us need those role models and people to guide us and help us and to mentor us. And children, if you don't have that, I'd encourage you to look for that. Maybe in summer camps. I know we've just missed that now. Or other things like that. Maybe in inter-church meetings where they exist. But look out for good people that we can model ourselves from who are just a little bit older than us. But do you real good. So we've talked already, haven't we, about children. You've got something really valuable you can teach us. You're loved and protected. The third thing then, the last thing that I want to share with all of you is this. Children, you are welcome. Children, you're welcome. And this is the verses that Nigel read from Matthew chapter 19 and verse 13 and 14. Do you remember that verse where the children were brought to Jesus so that he could lay his hands on them and pray? But the disciples rebuked the people. In other words, don't get rid of the kids. We don't want them round here. But Jesus said, let the little children come to me and don't hinder them, don't stop them. For to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. And he laid his hands on them. Now, it's a little bit of a shame, to be honest, that Matthew chapter 19 happens after Matthew chapter 18. Now, you might think it's quite obvious. Well, hang on, of course Matthew chapter 19 happens after Matthew chapter 18. But the point is this, the disciples hadn't learned from what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 18 and were still getting things wrong in Matthew chapter 19. Now, let's be fair to the disciples. The disciples loved Jesus. They wanted to serve him and do what was right. But they messed up. They got it wrong. And they were trying to help Jesus and do what he wanted. And they ended up doing the opposite. And do you know what? That happens to the best of us sometimes. We mess up and we get things wrong. And these disciples made the children feel unwelcome when Jesus wanted to welcome them. And maybe sometimes we get this wrong too. It's not just the disciples who struggle with this. We do too. We want you children to hold on to your humility and dependence on God. We want you to be protected and to know that you're loved. But maybe sometimes because we want all those things, maybe that might mean that you don't feel that you're welcome. And if that's ever happened, then we're sorry for that. Because we want you to know you are welcome. So what do I mean when I say you're welcome? Well, the most important thing that I mean, and what Jesus meant here in Matthew chapter 19, was that you are welcome to come to Jesus. That Jesus invites you to come to him. He welcomes you. He wants you. He wants you to believe in him. He wants you to trust him. He wants you to follow him. He wants you to recognize and know that you're a sinner, somebody who's done things that are wrong, who is in need of forgiveness. He wants you to know that he's willing and able to forgive you. So he wants you to come so that you can pray to him, that you can tell him that you love him and trust him, and want to follow him with his help, that you're sorry for the wrong things that you've done. That's the primary thing that I want to get across when I say you're welcome. But if Jesus invites you and welcomes you, then as a church, we want to invite you and welcome you too. We don't want to hinder you, to make it harder for you to come to Jesus. We want to make it easier for you to come. We want you to be welcome here. But what does that mean? What does it mean to welcome children into the fellowship? What does it mean? Well, the Bible gives us lots of freedom. There's some things, you know, in the Bible's really clear. Let me give you an example. Do not murder. That's really clear, isn't it? But then there are other things that the Bible doesn't say very much about at all. And how we welcome children, the Bible's not all that clear about it. And the reason for that is a good reason. The reason for that is the Bible or God gives us freedom. So let me give you a quick example. Would it be more welcome to children to have children in the Sunday service like we have now, so that we're all together and can worship God and together and learn the same things? Is that the most welcoming thing to do? Perhaps it is. But maybe some people might think, well, that's all very well, and it's kind of nice to be with each other, but the songs that you sing upstairs are not as good as the Sunday school songs that we used to sing, or the songs that we sing in Adventurers. And I learn more when I'm in Adventurers. Is that called Adventurers anymore, is it? Explorers. I learn more in Explorers because it's tailored and just right for me. So do you know what? I'd feel more welcome if we weren't all together, but there was something special just for the children. Now, which of those is right? Here's the point. The Bible doesn't say. It gives us freedom. And that's one of the reasons, it's not the only reason, but it's one of the reasons why we've done that differently over the years. And might well do it differently again in the future. Because in different churches and with different children, either could work well. And that's okay. You see, when we get children and adults together, things change. We had a dads v lads football match not that long ago. Now, usually, the kids play on their own, and then us mums and dads will kind of watch at the side. But this was a special occasion, and we were invited to play. And it made it a very different game to normal. We had a quick conversation as dads at the beginning. Do you know what the question that we asked right at the beginning? Should we let them win? No. Everyone felt. Now, how did we play? Well, we weren't doing big slide tackles. We weren't claiming that this goal hanger over here was offside. Well, somebody did claim that, but we ignored him. We didn't try and stick it in the top corner from 20 yards. We didn't do any of that. And the kids, they didn't play as they normally played either. It's probably fair to say they didn't see quite as much of the ball as they might have done in their normal game. You see, the game was different. But everyone enjoyed it. But it was different because everyone was there. And do you know what? I think if all of the games were like that, that probably wouldn't be any good. Because the kids would maybe get bored after a while, because all they're doing is chasing the ball around while the dads are passing it to one another. And the dads might get bored, because you can't do the kind of real gutsy stuff of football. So it's good, actually, for the kids to play on their own sometimes, and good for the dads to play on their own sometimes, and great when we're together. I think church life should be a bit like that, too. So, if you're a child, or an adult, you are welcome. Welcome to do what? Welcome to serve in the church? Welcome to take communion? Welcome to get baptized? Welcome to become a member? Welcome to what? Well, maybe you might think I'm too young to serve in the church. Well, some of you I know already are serving in the church. I had a friend who had a preschool child, and every time it was my friend's turn on church cleaning, he used to take his child with him to help. Which might not sound very exciting if you're a preschool child, but the church they had had these huge polished wooden pews, and he had to polish them every week. So this little boy's job was to spray the polish on the pews. He loved doing that. And then his dad would sit him on the duster on the end of the pew and sling him down the pew to polish it. I think that's a great way of involving children in the church. We should put the pews back. Some of you, with your parents, visit some of the older folk to encourage them. Some of you help younger children. You're already serving. It's great to see. Maybe there's other things I don't know about. And yet, at the same time as that, we want you children to hold on to that childlike humility that we spoke about. We don't want to be pushy. We want to protect and love you. We don't want to put you in situations you're not ready for. And you see, maturity is a difficult thing. It comes in different ways. There are people who are spiritually mature, but maybe not emotionally mature. And some the other way around. And some who may be physically very mature, but not spiritually or emotionally mature. We're all at different stages. What's important, though, is not necessarily how mature we are, but whether we are becoming more mature, whether we're growing. And maturing and growing, in other words, takes two things. It takes time and it takes exercise. It takes time and it takes exercise. In other words, if you want to be physically strong, okay, you couldn't just, right, okay, I'll run a marathon tomorrow. I'm not sure there's anyone here today who could do that. We're not ready. We're not spiritually strong. We're not physically, rather, strong enough to run a marathon tomorrow. We need time and exercise to build up to that. So it is with growing generally. And maybe if you're five, even if you tried really hard and exercised every day, you still wouldn't be able to run a marathon until you're older. You have to wait and be patient. And it's like that in the church too. So, what I've done is asked a load of questions and not really given any answers. What does it look like and feel like to be welcomed? What I'm trying to say, children, tonight is this. We want you to know that you are welcomed. But that might mean something different for each one of you. So if there's been things that you've been puzzled over, or things maybe even that you're not happy with or don't understand, why don't you talk first to your parents about it, perhaps tomorrow or some other time, because under God they've got primary responsibility for your care. Speak to them about the things that we've been talking about having something valuable you can teach us, about being loved and protected, about being welcome. If you'd like to talk to me or any of the other elders, you're very welcome to do that as well, of course. But talk to Mum and Dad. But the most important thing that I've said tonight, do you remember what it was? Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. And more important than what the church does, it's what Jesus does. He opens his arms and he welcomes his little children to come to him.